Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. If you have an opportunity, please make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Those things help the channel a ton. But more than anything, thank you so much again for being here. We got to get into things right away. We've got an awesome conversation with Justice Mosqueda. Per usual, Justice and I went about an hour on a wide range of topics. You're not going to want to miss it. Fantastic show for you today. Let's kick it off right now. All right, you know who it is. It's Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. It's time to talk some Green Bay freaking Packers. Of course, find him as well over at AcmePackingCompany.com. Justice, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Went to Moda Center last night. Andy, I was like, okay, I'm going to get some, this is not sponsored, Dos Equis, right? They just have it on tap. Get the yep. Dos Equis. How much do you think the Dos Equis were in me?
$11 for a cup of like a normal standard cup.
It's $20. Andy, that's after that, I was like, it's got to be cheaper to just get the mixed drink after this. I'm feeling a little sleepy. I had no idea who the two openers were. I went to a concert with Addy, so it wasn't for me or anything like that. I was like, I got to get juiced up a little bit. Ordered a Red Bull vodka. How much do you think?
There you go. I was just in Vegas. I went to see Daniel Tosh, and like, I don't think the beers were that expensive there. And like, everything in Vegas is like, I spent $7 on a bottle of Sprite. Like that's a real thing that happened inside a casino. There was like, I was dying of thirst, and I'm like, I wanted a Sprite, and it was like $7, and I was too lazy to be like, no, it's all right. I'm just like, fine, whatever. And I don't think the beer there was $20.
Guess how much the Red Bull vodka ran me.
If the beer is 20, it's got to be what, like 28?
$29.40.
Yeah. If the beer is 20,
this is ridiculous. Right. I'm going to start bringing flasks in. Enough's enough.
Funny flask story for Packers fans. It wasn't a flask, but what we used to do, if anybody that is in charge of my season tickets is listening, this is not a true story. For everyone else, it is. What we used to do when I was a little bit after college, or maybe right around college, is in winter games, we would bring in a bottle of Dr. McGillicuddy's, right? Which is like a peppermint schnapps. And we would get hot chocolate in the stadium, and you take a sip of the hot chocolate and you fill it with McGillicuddy's, and then you take like a half a drink of the hot chocolate with McGillicuddy's, and then you fill up the half with McGillicuddy's, and then you just like drink it, and like you end up just drinking like 90% McGillicuddy's by the end. You're feeling really good by the time the game is over. Long story short, one of the times I had these huge I guess mittens that you would like, that would go like up to your arm. And I would hold there, I would have the thing of McGillicuddy's in the mittens, and like they would say like to go like this, and I'd be holding my mittens in my hands like this, and they would like pat me down entirely, and the McGillicuddy's would just be in the mittens. Nobody ever looks inside of a mitten for anything, right? So I would always get in. Well, one time I didn't have my mittens with me, so I go to like pants the McGillicuddy's, and like right before I get in, I'm standing in line, and all I hear is and like it fell out of my pants, and the thing shattered right. And like, I just ignored it, just kept walking. And we did not have McGillicuddy's for that game. So if you're going to do it, don't
pants. That's weird. Who is that? Definitely not me. Yeah,
just get big mittens is what you need to do. I don't know if it works in concerts, but it certainly works for cold Packer games.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't work in an arena in October, but
probably not. Probably not. All right, we got a ton to get into. Let's start with Packers Cardinals. This has been sort of the standard feel after a Packers. Yeah, it's fine. They won, whatever. But how did you feel about this one?
The first thing I want to talk about, because I know that this is kind of like a narrative of like, wow, what a slog of a game, and you know, the pace of play so slow and stuff like that. After watching the offensive film, I think it's pretty clear why it was like that. The Packers had a pretty specific game plan They were getting into nubsets. We talked about nubsets against Washington, right? I told you guys this would come up again at some point during the season. Nubsets are basically, you know, the tight ends are on one side, which is the nub, right? And the wide receivers are on the other side of the field, right? So what does that
do?
Well, against this team specifically, it forced you to ask the question, hey, Arizona, if you're playing man coverage, do you want the cornerbacks to travel with the receivers? Or do you want that receiver manned up against the tight end? And now the slot receiver is manned up against a safety. If they're in 12 personnel, it's a linebacker, right? The wheeled linebacker, something like that. And Arizona, as Matt has pointed out 1,000 times in press conferences, is like one of the best teams in terms of hiding their coverage shells, right? So they didn't want to get into doubles sets, right? Where, you know, you have two, you know, outside receivers on either side of the formation, and then you have, you know, a tight end on one side, a slot receiver on the other, right? They didn't want to get into that because that's where Arizona can really start doing some tricky dicky stuff, right? And start rotating that safety. And you're like, oh, the slot blitzed and we didn't have any eyes on it. And we just got nailed, right? So they did a lot of stuff where they were trying to get pre-snap indicators on whether Arizona was in man or whether they were in zone. Cause you kind of have to tell. You can't hold your cards as hard, I guess, is the best way to put it when teams are in those nub sets, right?
Sure.
The other thing too is they spent a lot of time at the line of scrimmage. Jordan is calling out a lot of stuff at the line, making a lot of checks at the line. They're pushing the running back, right, to make it look like it's going to go empty, and then they'll bring him back in. That's another man zone tell indicator because there's not a lot of ways you can hide man coverage and, you know, when you're playing against empty. So, like, here's a good example. Packers played dime defense for the first time all year in the red zone against Arizona on the Michael Parsons, one of the Michael Parsons sacks. I have to.
The second one, I think
it specific.
Is.
Yeah. Be specific on which one it is. And on that one, technically, like if PFF is charting it, like Isaiah McDuffie is playing cornerback on that play. Cause the running back is the guy who split out on the sideline. Right. And the Packers were playing cover two man, which is, you know, a man defense. So you can't really hide that stuff, right? And that's kind of the game that the Packers were playing. So even if you look at, like, the big fourth down call that everyone's talking about, like, ooh, woo, we went for it, all that stuff, right? We went for the win. We didn't go for the tie. Probably wouldn't have been a tie. We probably would have lost that football game. We forced one punt all game. I don't care about field position at that point. Like, go get the points. Go get the points. Go up. If we lose on a field goal, that is not a bad position of, like, you don't want to be in that spot. But on that play, Packers motion to receiver. They think they get man zone tell indicators. They push the running back, bring him back in. Love barks at the offensive line because I think he cans the play, actually. And then they snap the ball with like 2 seconds left on the clock. And I think that's one of the reasons why this game kind of felt like a slog. I don't even think it was necessarily Matt being like, we don't want to play that many offensive plays. It was just like, we got to get up to the line with like 25 seconds left. And then we need all the information before we snap this football, which is, they kind of changed that game to game. Like, if you guys remember the Browns game, like, they were going hurry up, no huddle when Myles Garrett wasn't on the field, right? They were trying to take as many snaps as possible when Myles Garrett was off. So this is it's not a team that can't go fast. It's just in this specific game, it's not that they wanted to go slow. They just wanted the information. Again, I think that there's a delineage between those two frames of thought. The Packers had never played. I think they had played more than 30% nub snaps in one game so far this year. And then in this one, they played something like 42%. Like, it was a ton. Sure. Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you feel what they did was worthwhile? Do you feel it was like the right situation to do it in? Do you feel like they got enough information out of it? Or do you feel like it was almost paralysis by analysis and they slowed themselves down, and instead of trying to just run their stuff, they almost outthought themselves?
No, I think they probably did it right, considering the fact that like Josh Jacobs wasn't going to play that many carries, and Emmanuel Wilson isn't that effective as a ball carrier, right? Which like you can be go ahead and be mad about that if you want to be mad about that, right? That the running game, you know, didn't really go off like we had seen like the week prior. But I think that they knew they had to win some through the air in this game, and they were just like, we got to be like triple sure that we know what we're getting when we snap the football. The I don't want to jump up forward too far ahead, but like Matt just talked about all the man coverages and blitzes and stuff that the Steelers do. They don't disguise it as well as Arizona does. I would think that this is maybe a game where they want to play a bunch of nub sets and stuff like that again, just because of the man coverage concept of it. I don't think it'll be as slow. I think it'll be like Washington, where, you know, against Washington, they were kind of getting into those nub sets and then we're basically like, yeah, you show it, right? So because Dan Quinn's defenses show it, they know they're going to get cover three or they're going to get cover one if it's middle of the field closed, right? If they have that post safety in the middle of the field. And it's pretty easy to tell if it's going to be man or zone based off of the leverage of the cornerbacks and stuff like that. So I think this is going to be more of a game like the Washington game where you just line up in it and there's not going to be a whole ton of like late motions in the back pushing and stuff like that. And they just try to get in those sets to call beaters rather than try to figure out what the hell the chill of the defense is holding.
No, I think that makes sense. Yeah. Because one of the things that I've been thinking about is it feels like this is only a matter of time before every team gets really good at disguising like this. And we're seeing it better and better throughout the league. Is this a viable option for offenses, or is there going to have to be a pretty significant evolution in offenses of how they're going about doing this? Because you see some of the best teams at disguising and it is a nightmare to try to figure out up front. And I haven't exactly figured out how to completely counter that yet, or like what the next step for offenses is.
I mean, the next step for offenses is like get a really good quarterback who's good at full field progression reads. Like, go find Tom Brady. Yeah, good luck. Like, there's not many of those coming around. I think this was just a natural evolution of the defense too, because really like the whole like Seahawks brand of football and stuff like that, right? That kind of like took over the league in the mid 2010s was, yeah, you got to have four pass rushers that are good enough at getting after the quarterback, and you just sit back and play zone coverage, right? And then, you know, are you playing cover three and you're spinning it, or are you playing cover two? Because those two coverages are way different. The cornerback can either be playing the sideline or he's jamming that guy and just playing it right there, right? And then the offense's answers to that, it's kind of been like LaFleur is really good at pass rushing plans. I don't think he probably gets enough credit for that. Like, we're playing TJ Watt this week. Yeah, knock on wood. I'm not that worried about like TJ Watt having like a Micah Parsons type of game, right? That he just had against the Arizona Cardinals, because Matt's really good at getting a second, third body on these guys, chipping, all that stuff. Like, when there's a guy on the defensive line that like you need to have multiple hands on, he's pretty good at that. And I think defenses started seeing that when they lived in that four down, we rush with four, we get home with four, we're dropping seven in coverage world. And there's just not enough good pass rushers to go around. And when you do have a good pass rusher, you're getting double teamed, right? So I think the return on investment wasn't great. And teams were like, all right, well, then how do we mess with the quarterback and the picture of it post-snap? Because what else can you do at that point in the passing game? Like, those are really your two options. Unless you're Rex Ryan, you had Daryl Revis and Antonio Cromartie, and you just choke the hell out of wide receivers and you just beat them. Like, there's not that many cornerbacks who could do that, let alone five guys who can play man coverage at the same time, down to down on the same team. So,
yeah, it's tough to find. Speaking of those sets, that obviously involves a lot of two tight end formations.
Yep.
Kraft's been really good. Musgrave, I tweeted this out the other day. Musgrave in his last 15 games, 300 snaps, 15 catches, 108 yards, no touchdowns. The most catches he's had in a game has been three. The most yards he's had in a game has been 32. His average over the last 15 games per game is one catch for 7.2 yards. John Fitzpatrick is even worse than that, who has now played, I think, 16 games in Green Bay and has less productivity than that. We've talked about like different positions to maybe go a little bit hunting for. If they plan on playing more two tight end sets, is that like a sneaky, do they need a better number two tight end?
Man, I don't know. They're kind of getting away with it right now with just like Musgrave go be a decoy, right?
Okay.
Like if he's lining up in the slot, he's a blocker. If he's lining up outside, it's just to exhaust a cornerback or get a man zone tell, right? They're not throwing it at him. If he's lining up as an inline tight end and they're running the football, he's usually on the backside of those runs. And outside of the Cowboys game where the Cowboys just didn't rotate to like Musgrave motioning and stuff like that, teams have kind of respected it. So like, as long as teams respect it and you're just saying like, yes, we put Musgrave here. Now you're moving a player away from where the play is actually going to go, right? And we're going to play 10 on 10 football instead of 11 on 11 football. It works. At some point, someone's going to call your bluff, but that hasn't happened yet. So, I mean, it's not going to happen against the Steelers when they're playing all this man coverage. They're going to have to put someone on them. So I don't know if that's happening this week. There was one play where I think Love took a sack on it. It might have been the one Rasheed blew. I can't remember. Okay. Musgrave gets off the ball. He's in the slot. And you could tell this was like the one play that was designed for Musgrave. And he split. He gets off the ball. He splits it. And you're like, whoa, you should not be doing that as a tight end. And he's wide open, but the pressure gets there before Love even has a shot to throw it to him. That one probably could have been a big one, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, he's being used as a decoy more than anything. Yeah. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
The old Jarrett Boykin on, you know, Richard Sherman's side of the field, so you can play 10 on 10 the other stretch of the way. I wish they had a little bit better of an option there. But hey, if, like you said, if teams are going to honor it and he can take somebody away, I mean, so be it, I guess.
We'll see what happens too when Christian comes back. And
speaking of which, as we've been recording this, Christian Watson did state in his press conference that his plan, and it sounds like the Packers' plan, is for him to play this upcoming Sunday against Pittsburgh. So breaking news as we're recording, old news to people who are listening to this, but sounds like Christian Watson is going to play this Sunday.
Makes sense, especially with the Wick situation, right? That's another thing that's kind of been under, like, no one talks about in the press conferences or anything. Like, Wicks has been unable to finish the last two games. He didn't practice today on Wednesday when we're recording. Because he's been out, it's been a whole lot more Malik Heath snaps as an outside receiver. And maybe that's one reason why they're leaning in on the multiple tight end sets and stuff like that. I could see that changing down the line. I don't think that they're like, Luke Musgrave is a crucial part of our offense. Like, Tucker Kraft doesn't leave the field.
Yeah.
And Musgrave basically never gets on the field in one tight end sets, right? When they have to play one single tight end and Kraft is getting a breather, it's Fitzpatrick who's getting in.
So I have a follow-up to the, obviously we kind of talked about Packers Cardinals, 6 games in, 7 weeks in. I don't know how you can answer this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Justice, who are these Green Bay Packers?
I don't know, because the first 2 weeks of the year, I would have said block them up and take shots, right?
Yep.
That's what the team seemed like. And then we've been dealing with the offense. I mean, this was the first game the five offensive linemen played start to finish all together. I know the week prior there were no injuries, but Ryan was still in there rotating. I think it was like 11 plays on one drive. And even then, like, Rashid Walker was banged up. Banks was banged up. Tom was banged up. Like, I don't know, because this unit is never kind of like, no one's been healthy. Our offensive line finally got healthy and Josh Jacobs is puking and his calf is hurt, right? And two of our receivers are out. It's been a weird year. They're surviving. Again, we talked about this like a couple weeks ago where I think it was in the context of the field goal protection stuff. But like, I think all the issues with the offensive line is just going to get figured out because they were so banged up to start the year. Like when you're playing 11 or I think it was 10 different lineups in like the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season. Yeah. Like, but it's only going to go up. I've seen like the Ben Baldwin pass protection stuff where, you know, you could look at it like 3 weeks ago, right? Coming out of the bye, and Packers were like 30th in like pass protection. And now they're already up to like 7th or something like that. Right. So like your line was banged up. It really boils down to that. Like, how can you have an identity when your line is banged up? And a lot of identity really is tied to your run game more than it is your passing game. And we've never had a healthy offensive line and healthy number one bell cow running back. Right. So it's tough to call.
This is never an excuse. I get that. It does feel like, especially offensively, the injuries have been a little bit under discussed when it comes to this overall efficiency of this team.
George still got his hand wrapped.
Yes. George still got his hand wrapped. Jaden Reed, I think, is a much bigger deal than people have been talking about whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Christian Watson's obviously a huge deal. Wicks has now missed a little bit of time as well at wide receiver. You know, along the offensive line, they've had to shuffle a ton. You know, the last couple of weeks, Jacobs has not been 100%. Marshawn Lloyd still isn't back. Like, there have been a good chunk of injuries. Defensively, you know, Wyatt, LVN, a couple things here and there, but they've mostly been pretty good on defense. Offensively, it has been a lot bigger struggle. And I think that's a much bigger reason why it hasn't looked quite as sexy as maybe we wanted it over this first 6 weeks. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I get to make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Time to start getting ready for week 8. It's the big one. Aaron Rodgers faces Green Bay on Sunday Night Football. This one's going to be epic, and I'm already all in on Jordan Love in this game with a huge performance. Elsewhere in week 8, I'm going to go with big games for Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and if he plays, Lamar Jackson as well. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Lamar Jackson passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup. Up only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/packaday.
Yeah, man, we had a 13th offensive lineman or 14th offensive lineman. I can't remember what Brant Banks was.
There's 13th,
had to be active for a game day. Like, we were not in a good spot, but the team survived. I mean, that's ultimately all that matters, right?
Yep.
Not to be like, I understand the issues and stuff, but I don't think anything that the Packers did when they had banged up offensive linemen out there and, you know, you get 3 starters out and stuff like that has anything to do with what the Packers are going to be moving forward or in the postseason. So,
yeah, I think so too. I think it's only going to get better from here, especially along the offensive line. I know one of the things I love that you do is kind of track some of the depth chart changes. What were some of the big ones for this week that you noticed?
Dude. All right. The defensive line has gotten so wonky. because of the Wyatt and LVN injuries, they've had to do so many odd things up front. So at defensive end, Kingsley and Igbari, Baron Sorrell hit season highs in terms of snaps played, right? Sorrell played 18. He had never gotten more than 8 at defensive end before this game. Kingsley and Igbari played 32. His previous high was week 1, because obviously Micah Parsons was on a pitch count with 21. Since week 1, he hadn't hit 16. So he's doubled whatever he was playing between last game and week 1, right? They played Kobe Wooden at defensive end. I thought it was a 3 defensive tackle look and thought it was a 3-4 look at first. It's not. It's just their underfront and overfront, and they just have Wooden play defensive end on drive starters specifically. So what that means is possession change, right? They'll throw out Wooden at defensive end. And I think their plan is like, we're just going to stop the run on this down, and we're going to save the legs of our pass rushers for another down. Because they're matching it a lot with Kingsley and Igbari too, which is another weird thing. So you could watch like drive starters and you're like, wait, Michael Parsons and Rashawn Gary and Carl Brooks are all on the bench. Like even out of halftime that happened, right? You know, 30-minute break or whatever it is. The other thing too, Baron Sorrell is playing so many defensive tackle looks in these cheetah packages now. He played 12. That is nuts. Nasir Stackhouse has played 20 snaps at defensive tackle in the last 2 games for perspective. So they've kind of done this weird thing where, like, to keep everyone fresh, right? They're like, okay, all the backups are playing more. Also, Wooden, you're playing defensive end sometimes. Also, to make up for that, Sorrell, you're playing defensive tackle sometimes as a 200 and, what is it, like 56-pound rookie, day 3 pick. Again, we're so lucky that, like, I know the numbers probably for, like, PFF and stuff like that aren't great on Sorrell. Again, it's because he's taken up like double teams on the defensive interior and stuff like that, and having to play the run from a defensive tackle position again at like 250 pounds as a rookie. A lot of guys in this past draft class wouldn't be doing what Sorrell is doing in his position. So live and die with the PFF grade if you want. He's playing out of position and he's surviving, and that's kind of what the Packers need right now. So that's the big thing. Obviously, at corner, it's just all been Hobbs. Carrington got in 2 snaps at outside corner. That only happened in the 2 times they called dime, which is the first time they called dime at all this season, which is their 6 DB, or let me do math real quick. 6 DB look. It was on the Hail Mary and then the second Parsons sack. And on those plays, Hobbs kicked in as the second slot. But outside of that, they seem to be rolling with Hobbs. Hobbs gave up the second most yards in week 7. And Matt is like, yeah, there's going to be some bumps and bruises. We're going to continue with it. I don't know if that's a great idea. Slot, we got nothing. Safety is a little interesting, actually. They started using Bullard as a true safety again. We hadn't seen this since week 1 against the Detroit Lions. It was like a drive-by-drive thing. So, like, Evan Williams is still playing every snap that they're in nickel sets, right? At safety, and Bullard is playing in the slot. But in their 4-3 looks, which they played a good amount of in this game because the Cardinals were playing so heavy, Bullard actually kind of like rotated on like a drive-by-drive basis as like the other 4-3 safety opposite of Xavier McKinney with Evan Williams. So it seems like they're opening the door for that competition again. With that being said, a very interesting thing to look at this week is going to be that safety rotation. There is no heavier team in the NFL than the Pittsburgh Steelers. No one plays more 6 offensive lineman sets. No one plays more multiple tight end sets. The Pittsburgh Steelers, in every single one of these articles that you're going to read about the trade deadline, it's like the Steelers are begging for another receiver, right? Like they have DK, and then they're like, after that, man, it's really – It's pretty much just DK. We got a bunch of tight ends at this point, right? And they're calling the offense like that. And Arthur Smith is like, he's the sicko meme, right? Looking through the window, just being like, all these tight ends, that's perfect. That's all I ever wanted to do. So the Packers are going to play a lot of base defense in this game because you're going to see a lot of multiple tight end looks. A lot of, like, you're going to see three tight end looks or two tight ends and six offensive linemen in there looks in this game. So I'm assuming Isaiah McDuffie is going to play a ton. And whoever they decide to be that 4-3 safety in the game is, you know, going to have his work kind of cut out for him because he's going to have to fit the run a whole ton.
They also have that the tight end who looks like an offensive lineman, even though he's got a little bit better agility than that. You know, almost three. That they've got a lot of unique things that they're going to throw at you. So I'm very interested to see how Halfley matches up on defense. I have really liked how McDuffie has played so far in the 4-3 looks. Hopper also got two snaps this week in 4-3 with
when Quay was out.
Yeah. He had one good play, one bad play. But yeah, a little playing time there for Hopper.
I don't hate it. Like, Hopper was playing good in the summer, so I was not opposed to letting Hopper and McDuffie kind of fight it out when they were giving Isaiah Simmons all those snaps just to not be on this football team in the preseason.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I think it would be an issue. I really like, though, the way McDuffie has played, and it's very limited snaps. Obviously, it's not a ton, but I've been impressed with what he's done so far this year. Going to that corner battle, though, or I guess it's not a battle because, like you said, Valentine only played two snaps this week. Hobbs played all of it. To me, the corners have not been good enough. You could include Nixon, Hobbs, kind of the entire crew in there. I do think some of it's been good receivers. I think some of it's been good quarterback play, but at some point you can only go so far with that. Where are you at with the corners right now?
I think the squeaky wheel right now is Hobbs.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. Like, Keyshawn's fighting and all that stuff. Like, some of those ones against Jamar Chase, like, I'm not.
Yeah, for sure. No question. That.
But like, Hobbs is lunch. And buddy, if Aaron can do anything, it's pick on a weak link. And that has me very worried going into this game, especially considering, you know, Steelers get turnovers. Aaron, literally best of all time in not throwing interceptions. That has me pausing a little bit about my confidence going into this game. I know we're like road favorites, all that stuff. I think it's bad vibes that we're wearing the all whites and they're wearing the throwbacks and all that. Like, there's poor kids who are going to watch like only the Packers national games this year and think that the Packers just like wear all white. That's all they do.
It's unacceptable. It's a tragedy. I have a lot of worries about this game. We'll get into that when we get to Packers Steelers, but yeah, the Hobbs thing is interesting. Would you have gone to Valentine at some point last game?
Buddy, I would have gone to Valentine after the Cowboys game.
Yeah.
So I can tell you this for a fact. Hobbs's camp thought he was coming in as a slot corner who could potentially work his way into outside corner. But they just like gave him the outside corner. Like, Hobbs was banged up and he had the meniscus tear.
Yep.
And had the surgery. Like, he wasn't here for a training camp, you know? So I think it's just like this case isn't draft and develop, but it's like the same type of issue, which is just like the like wish casting, right? Where it's just like, we paid Hobbs the money. We imagine him to be the second starting corner. Carrington Valentine, we drafted him in the seventh. We don't imagine him to be the starting corner. So we're just going to keep deploying the defense like how we imagine, we hope things will develop down the line instead of just playing the hot hand. By the way, after LaFleur said Golden was their best punt returner, he's returned one punt in 2 weeks and Romeo's handled the rest of it. So yeah, take that with a grain of salt whenever they're on the podium and are like, we're playing our best players. It's not true.
Yeah.
It's not true. You guys are trying to develop these guys on the fly. And I don't know if you guys have the wiggle room to be doing this. Like, they're rotating the defensive line so much. Andy, starting defensive line of Kobe Wooden, Carl Brooks, Rashawn Gary, Micah Parsons. Okay.
Yep.
The Packers played, I got to look up this, 76 snaps on Sunday. Do you know how many total the entire starting four defensive line for the Packers played together?
I'll say 12.
76 snaps. 10. 13% of the snaps, right? That's so when crazy. People are talking about Well, you know, Micah Parsons is getting double teamed. Guys got to win their one-on-ones. Teams are just picking like whoever the guy off the bench is. And you can do that on 87% of the Packers snaps where it's like, oh, Nasir Stackhouse is coming into the game. Yeah, one-on-one Nasir Stackhouse.
There were a few of those too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know why they do this, but they're still like in draft and develop, maybe not draft and develop, but just developmental mode is probably how we should say it, where they're looking at this as like, they're looking at the regular season as like low risk propositions, which I just don't know if that's the case. The Lions and Bears are breathing down your neck and you need to win football games to even get a chance at hosting a home football game in the postseason. So that's, you think it's, I can't imagine like how tight their buttholes have to be when you're doing all this rotation. The Arizona Cardinals were up late in the game. You score the touchdown. You're like, oh my God, thank God. And then you're still having to play in the 2 minute drill, like Baron Sorrell and Kingsley and Igbaré for like three snaps in a row in the 2 minute drill.
Yep.
Because Gary and Parsons still need breathers, even though you did all of this heavy rotation throughout the game. Right. And it's just like, I don't know. Like me, I would find whatever like the limit for these pass rushers are and stay under that limit once you find it. But like, none of these guys are playing Max Crosby, Aiden Hutchinson, Miles Garrett level of snaps on this defensive line.
Yeah.
So they're rotating those guys. I think they're wish casting at cornerback, maybe the slot too. Like, I'm not fully convinced our best lineup isn't Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney playing safety all game, no matter what the defensive personnel is.
Yep.
CV
Evan
and
Williams
Keyshawn
never come out off the field. Corners.
Yeah, and then Hobbs playing in the slot, and you know, maybe you want to use Bullard in like the red zone as a safety just because he like fits the run harder or something like that. But that's not what they're doing right now. I mean, that's what me sitting my ass on this in this chair talking to you is thinking.
Yeah, I totally get it as well. I guess I don't think Evan Williams should ever come off the field. I think he's been far too good. The defense, the rest of the defensive back. And it's also maddening to me that like we'll rotate everyone as much as possible on the defensive line, but like we have no appetite whatsoever for getting CV playing time instead of Nate Hobbs in any situation.
Well, they did, but they just like, it's just dwindled week to week.
Yes, correct. Right? In this like, game, I meant more specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's like we're CV is losing playing time as Hobbs continues to play worse.
To get worse. Yep.
What are you doing?
It doesn't make sense.
What the hell are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a it's like the defensive line is like a spirit of competition sort of thing. You know, like we want these guys to play and push each other, and it's like part of the DNA of the team. But again, then at corner, you would think CV would be getting time there too, and it's just not been the case as of late. I don't get it.
They're so, you can't trust them when they say those things, because they say like the spirit of competition stuff. Stevie's not getting on it. He's not even getting on special teams.
Yeah.
Because they don't use him on special teams. So he legit played three snaps this whole game. Like the punter is playing more snaps than Carrington Valentine right now. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. But you're talking about, hey, we got to get guys rotated in, engaged. We're going to rotate Sean Ryan and Jordan Morgan at right guard for the first third of the season and all of last season and all this stuff. And I'm like, when do you pick and choose who needs to stay engaged and who doesn't and all this stuff? Like, it's to the coach's discretion. So don't buy into it, because they're not doing consistently across the board. Nick Neiman hasn't played a single snap on defense. Bo Melton hasn't played a single snap on defense. Kamal Haddon hasn't played a single snap on defense. So you can't tell me like, yeah, we just got to keep guys engaged.
Yeah.
That's why we're rotating them into the game.
It's not like, the case.
It's not true.
Not that this matters all that much, and it's been an interesting week, couple weeks for PFF to say the least, but PFF's 15th graded corner, Carrington Valentine, on the season overall. So I don't have it the same way. I don't think he's been quite that good, but I definitely think he's been better than Nate Hobbs so far, who just happens to be my lowest graded player on defense so far throughout the course of the season, despite him not playing the entirety of the season so far with some of those injuries early on. I will say, and I've said this before, I don't think Nate Hobbs is as bad as he's played so far. It's not been good enough. Like I said,
he's coming off a knee surgery and all this stuff. Yeah. Like, I'm open to the idea of he'll get better with more time at outside corner and the further he gets off of his knee recovery. Right.
Yeah.
But right now we're playing a bunch of close games that we're barely winning. And a lot of it is because he's getting lit up.
And I don't understand if like you can recognize in a game of like, oh, this isn't going well. Let's get him off the field. Let's get CV in the game and we can reevaluate it next week. We don't have to make a long-term decision right here, right now of what to do with Nate Hobbs. But right now that guy's getting cooked and you've got another real viable corner that's really good at coverage on the outside. Tackling may be an issue from time to time, but he's good at coverage on the outside. Like maybe just put that guy back in the game. It just doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it. And like, even if you wanted to play like Hobbs as like the 4-3 corner, which is like a weird way to do it, right? But if you wanted him to be like the 4-3 corner, Carrington be the nickel corner, Bullard be the slot, and then in the red zone, when things start to become a little tougher, you put Bullard in as like the red zone safety and for Evan Williams, right? Like, I think that's another viable way to kind of like, okay, what are our guys best at? And can we put them in the right positions? And right now they're just like, nah, like Hobbs are starting outside corner. I'm like, we're going to lose the football game because of this at some point.
I was ready for that final drive for it to cost them of like Hobbs gets beat for a touchdown at the end or something like that. And I'm like,
dude, that's what I'm saying. Like I saw like, it's like Sorrell, Kingsley and Igbore, Warren Brinson. And then I can't remember who the other defensive tackle is, but there's like three snaps in a row where those guys are the defensive linemen trying to stop a 2-minute drill. Yeah. I just cannot imagine being on that sideline and being like, that pass rush is not enough when you have Hobbs out there. Like you will lose football games doing that stuff.
Yep.
You will lose football games doing that.
Yeah, they missed Devontae Wyatt and LVN for a variety of reasons, but the depth is certainly one of them where it feels like if those two are healthy, at least you've got like two of LVN, Gary, Wyatt, Parsons, and then you have like still Brooks and Wooden. It feels Enigbare, you got like seven deep and you feel really good that like a couple of those guys are out there almost no matter what. But right now it certainly does not feel that way.
Yeah.
Hopefully Wyatt's back.
That's what's got me spooked. But yeah, again, like the offensive line, I think the defensive line is going to figure itself out just off of like health, knock on wood, all that stuff. I think the bigger issues to me, I mean, it's really the biggest, it's Hobbs. Hobbs is the thing that has me the most concerned about this team right now, is that they're just willing to ride it with Hobbs. And I'm like, well, what is your breaking point if it wasn't these past two games?
Yeah, corner and run blocking are my two of just even though I think it'll get better and the offensive line will get better over time, I still just need to see a little bit better consistency in run blocking. I know there's a lot of angst and frustration out of play calling and things like that. I think half of it just goes away if they run block better up front. And like some of those things that right now are not going for anything start going for 3, 4, 5 yards. It looks a whole heck of a lot better and it just hasn't been consistent enough. So run block better and get the corners playing a little bit higher level or just get CV out there and a whole heck of a lot better.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You wrote up because there is a... an organic movement, if you will, a Lucas Haversick movement to keep him on the team and maybe move on from Brandon McManus. I saw you wrote up. It's not as impossible as maybe, you know, you would maybe think it is. I wholeheartedly expect that Brandon McManus is going to stay on this team and be the kicker moving forward, but I'll let you take the floor. It sounds like might be possible if they wanted to swap.
They could save cap space this year and next year if they'd want to do it. Haversick is going to be an exclusive rights free agent. Again, I think the bigger question is just like, do they want to move off of McManus? Haversick has only kicked what, 4 field goals, I think, for the Packers at this point. Is that enough? Like, is just kicking one long field goal enough? I don't know. And then the whole other thing that we have to start thinking about kickers now is like their biggest value might be on the kickoff. It might not even be on the field goal team anymore.
He's been bad at it too. He's been low key bad. He's kicked multiple in the end zone.
They kicked the one into the end zone at the end of the game that I was like, what the hell? Why did we just give it to him at the 35?
I think and then after twice the game, they were like,
we told him not to.
Yeah. And then the previous week, we told him not to also
in that spot. And I was just like, okay, well, that's probably a knock like internally. If they're telling you do not, you know, put it in the landing zone and you're putting it in the end zone, like you're at minimum. Like, I mean, guys aren't trying to hit it at the goal line unless you're Brandon Aubrey and you're good enough to be able to actually hit it at the goal line. Like, you're probably trying to target like the 10 yard line and you're hitting it 5 yards deep in the end zone. You're 15 yards off on the kickoff. That's not good.
Yeah. That's been a low-key problem that's gone far less discussed. His previous stint, he didn't kick in 2024. In 2023, he was 11 of 11 under 40, which is obviously good.
Yes.
He was 2 of 6 from 40 to 49, 2 of 3 from 50-plus, which is fine, 19 of 22 on extra points, missing 3 extra points. So he was not exactly a picture of consistency. Now, kickers get better. That was 2 years ago, and he's obviously been good at it in Green Bay so far. Just for me, life on the line. You can have Lucas Haversick or Brandon McManus go out to kick a field goal. I'm sorry, I'm taking McManus every single time right now.
Yeah, again, I wrote the article more on because there were a lot of people that saw the extension and then were like, well, you just gave McManus an extension. You can't move off of him, right? And my whole point was just the numbers kind of work if this is something that you really want to do. Now, you have to solve for if this is something that you really want to do. At this point, I don't think that it's possible that they'll do it. I don't think the door is all the way closed. But, you know, the longer McManus is hurt, the more opportunity Haversick is going to get too, right? So,
for better or worse,
a possibility that is actually, like, there's a sliver of a chance that it's possible. But it is an open door at this point.
26 years old, people do forget or like not realize when you are on a 1 year vet minimum and then have an exclusive rights free agent deal the year after for a 1 year vet minimum, that like it is super cheap to do it that way. And you're usually going to save league money.
Minimum. Yeah, it's league minimum.
Yep, league minimum. So yeah, those are huge advantageous contracts. And he's 26 years old. McManus, obviously a little bit older, but I just don't see them. You could almost tell when Matt LaFleur was kind of talked about it. It was just almost like a non-topic too. I do think that one thing it really does allow you is to keep McManus sidelined as long as you absolutely need to, not rush him back, get him 100% healthy, and make it so that, hey, we're going to keep him until he's 110% good to go. We'll keep kicking this guy unless all of a sudden the wheels fall off. We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Prealcohol. ZBiotics Prealcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, Prealcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make Prealcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about Prealcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/Packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code Packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/Packaday and use the code Packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code Packaday.
Because the roster's not in a crunch either right now.
Not right now. They will have to cut somebody if with Watson being back this week, right?
But if you bring back Watson, like you can get rid of like Donovan Jennings.
Yes, Donovan Jennings and Ben Sims are probably the next two.
Yeah. Sims is the one.
And then there was, I thought there was one other one too, of like, they could potentially look Haddon? At maybe Haddon.
I think keep Haddon.
Oh, the double kicker. Sorry. I was thinking in my head, like, two kickers. Yeah. But obviously we're talking about the kicker, but yeah, two kickers, Donovan Jennings and Ben Sims would be the next, I think, three that you would look at.
Like, they can kind of do this as long as they can keep the second kicker on the roster for as long as they want to, as long as here are the pressure points. You want to bring someone else up from the injury report after Watson, right? We can withstand bringing up Watson. If you want to bring up Brinson, Colin Oliver, Jaden Reed, I know I'm probably missing someone else, but like Marshawn Lloyd, right?
Brent Cox.
Yep, Brent Cox. So if you want to bring up any of those guys, okay, now your roster is, you got to make a move. If there's an injury at quarterback, you probably have to make a move. If there's an injury at running back, you don't put the guy on IR and Marshawn Lloyd isn't coming back up. You probably need to make a move.
And unless then it's 3 weeks or 2 weeks or less, and you can just do Pierre Strong for 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah,
he's
true.
Got two call-ups left. There's some ways even to do that.
But yeah, like, there's not... relatively, this roster's...
Don't say it.
Like, there's not a good reason to be like, we have to get rid of Iversick and force McManus into the starting lineup this week. Like, there just isn't right now.
And you've got, again,
two
call-ups per week to as well to utilize where you need certain spots also. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can certainly get by if need be.
Do you think Josh Jacobs was going to play last week? When you saw Pierre Strong get called up to the game day roster, did you think he was going to play? Because that was the first time I was like, oh, shit.
I tweeted out, I said, the absolute best reading of this is that this is a game time decision for Jacobs, and that they want to be prepared in case he can't go. I'm like, you know, like, I'll say, I talked about it last week a lot. I'm not a medical expert. Can't pretend to be, wouldn't even know how to read the chart if you gave it to me. But like, I see calf now where like Tyrese Halliburton and Damian Lillard, like there's been multiple others in football and in, I think it was maybe Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers too, right? Where you had a calf injury, and then it seems like they're all good to go and they're fine. They're working their way back from it, and then Achilles. Yeah. And I see calf, and I'm like, I don't even know if it's warranted. I don't know if it's, I should or shouldn't be, but I just correlate it now of like, if you've got a calf injury, like sit like a year, like it's not, I'm not, but like sit as long as you need to, because I don't need to see anybody coming back too early after that. Like there was the play where he accelerated to the end zone on that play to the outside where I was like holding my breath. I'm like, cause you could just tell like he kicked it up a notch and I'm just like, oh God, please do not plant and pop something. Please do not plant and pop something. Like that's where I'm at with it now. So no, I did not think he was going to. And in a way I almost did not want him to, but man, kudos to him. He looked awesome. He was as good as you could possibly expect in that situation. And like, hopefully it's just past it and we don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, because I wasn't that worried about it on Friday.
Yep.
Because he was with the illness, was limited Wednesday, Thursday. Friday, he was a full participant, but then they added the calf designation on him, is I think how it worked out. And I was like, I really don't think that he's going to miss time with the, like the calf doesn't seem like that big of a deal if he was a full participant in practice. Because if a guy gets hurt in practice and then gets pulled out, like they're calling that limited. They're not calling that full, right?
Yep.
So I was like not worried about it. And then Saturday hit and I was like, they called it Pierre Strong. I was like, oh,
because there's no other reason, right? Emmanuel
Wilson. There's no reason to do it.
And like the only other thing would be like if they've been experimenting with him as like a kick returner and they love him as a kick returner or something.
How dare you? We imagine Savion Williams being a very good kick returner. So we will continue to play him as a good kicker turner, even though
in theory
we have an all pro corner.
The best thing you've said all show is you can't trust these guys. And that, I think in general with the Green Bay Packers, you just can't trust them. You don't know what's going to happen in any given moment. And yes, we will continue.
I don't like them having bright ideas. Cause like whenever they get in this mode where they're like, yeah, we'll just fart around in the regular season. And then in the postseason, that's when we really turn it up. And I'm like, I remember when you guys thought it was a bright idea to play Billy Turner at left tackle off of like 1 week of practice in the playoffs when he had like never done it before in Green Bay. Like, No more bright ideas. Do what you want to do in the playoffs right now and get good at it and adjust.
Yes.
I don't want a brand new team kicking off in the wild card round or the divisional round.
Best five.
I don't
best,
like that.
Best five. Best five. Best five guys out there. Who cares what order they're in? Doesn't matter. Just best five guys. And they didn't even do that, by the way. They still kind of screwed that up of getting their best five guys out there. I'm right there with you. You never know. There's just going to be some random thing out of nowhere that's just going to be like, yep, we're doing 10 snaps of Wildcat with Savion Williams per game now. It'll be something.
It's like divisional round loss to the 49ers where they're like, we're finally benching Nate Hobbs.
Nate Hobbs in like the fourth quarter after he's given up three touchdowns to Brandon Ayuk. No.
First snap of the game and you're like, is that Kamal Haddon out there at cornerback? It's just going to be something goofy with this team.
You got to love it. Really quick, Packers Steelers, thoughts on the game?
I think we touched on it a little bit. Very heavy offense. You know, they're relying on quick game a lot. They want to be an Arthur Smith team, which is like pound the rock, pound the rock, pound the rock, pound the rock, quick game, pound the rock, play action to DK. Like that is what that team is right now. Lots of tight ends. You're going to see a lot of base defense from the Packers end. See how that ends up holding up. See what happens with the safety rotation. Defensively, aggressive, play a lot of man coverage. That was the way LaFleur said it was like, it'll be interesting to see the way that they start off against us, which is like, everyone knows if you're going to pressure Green Bay, you're going to play a bunch of man, like they're going to take shots on you. Right. So I think that's kind of Matt's way of saying, like, we'll see if they want to live in that world. Because he's probably a little bit confident about their ability to take shots, especially if Christian's back. Yeah. Like it's going to be like Christian and Dobbs outside with Golden in the
Golden
slot.
In the slot.
There's not a whole lot of ways to cover your butts in that and man coverage. So
I'm in.
I'm hoping we hit some home run balls. I would like to see it after. You know, hopefully the take deep shots mentality didn't die after week two.
Watson, Dobbs, Golden, Kraft, Jacobs is really freaking fun. Like I'm ready for it. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, I'm ready. Hopefully not too many two tight end sets. Hopefully we get some. I need Chris Brooks playing third downs in this game. I would like to see him block up some like defensive tackle on a 60-yard touchdown pass to Christian Watson. I'll take that.
I'm not whoever's going against. Well, it's going to be Nick Herbig a lot on obvious pass downs. He's been awesome in that matchup with Rashid Walker. I'm genuinely nervous about. So there's a lot I'm concerned about in this game, but hopefully I'm just an idiot and wrong and the Packers just destroy the Steelers. And that'd be nice.
Fingers crossed. If it were only so easy. Revenge game. Where do we stand on a revenge game?
Did you hear Aaron?
People are over it.
Aaron said no revenge game for him. He said, you know, I don't know if we can trust that either, but he said no revenge game. He's like, he went and talked about Suamico and Chives and shopping at Piggly Wiggly and said he had a lot of fond memories and everything like that. So he's saying all the right things. I think if you were to stick him to a lie detector, and I think if you were to say,
I think he wants to beat us.
A 1,000,000%. There's going to be extra motivation. I would be willing to bet you, though, his primary motivation is still just winning this football game, helping the Steelers move on or like continue to do well. But he's motivated. He's going to want to beat them. And I actually give Aaron so much credit for how he handled the entire like divorce situation. I thought Green Bay handled it mostly well. I thought Aaron handled it about as well as could have possibly been expected. And like, that could have been so much uglier. And they both were just kind of like mostly amicable and all right. Yep. All right. Let's do this. You do this. I think from that point on, Aaron has really said nothing disparaging about Green Bay. I think he was frustrated with Brian in the trade situation when the trade wasn't getting done right away. But I think outside of that, I think everything kind of went as good as can be expected. I think when he played the Jets, I think that was a revenge game. I think
he's pissed about having to fly across the country.
Yes.
Just for Aaron Glenn to be like, we're cutting. We don't want you.
Yeah. I think he wanted to go nuclear on the Jets. I think that's true. I think this game, he wants to win very badly. I think it's a little bit of a legacy game, beating all 32 teams. He'll have extra motivation, but I don't think I would put it in like the quote unquote revenge game territory.
Cause this doesn't, like, maybe I'm wrong and maybe my perspective is out of whack here, but it feels like any of the Roger wars that were to be fought have kind of been settled at this point, and we're like a decent amount of time removed. This feels nothing like when we played Brett and he was Viking.
If
it feels nothing like that to me.
If this game's in Green Bay, Aaron gets cheered, right?
100%.
Yes.
Standing like standing ovation. He's like tipping his hat. The whole thing.
Like I was in the crowd booing Brett in his first game in Minnesota in Green Bay. Yeah. Like I was there, and the whole crowd was it was definitely semi divided, but it was the majority were, you know, booing Brett in a member of a Minnesota Vikings uniform. I think if this game's in Green Bay, I think it's super respectful. Like you said, you know, it's standing ovation, huge. I think it's totally 1,000,000% different.
I don't know, like, how much of that is like division rival or like, again,
I think if Brett came to Green Bay as a Jet, I think it would have been the same thing. I think it would have been standing over, because people were more pissed at the Packers than they were at Brett in that initial situation. At that point in time, they were more mad at Ted and Aaron and like in McCarthy and everything like that, that were really upset with it than they were with Brett. Cause Brett ultimately at the end wanted to come back, and that's where everything kind of got weird. But then once he went to Minnesota and got his way over there, and you could tell like Brett almost like went, you know, kind of, I want to beat the Packers, and was, it certainly swapped. And that's when you got the big aggressive boos and everything like that.
I think so many things are different too. Like even just like Roger's relationship with Love versus Roger's relationship with, at least early, with Brett, right?
Yep.
Where Love got drafted and Aaron immediately put his arms around him, right? And was like, this is going to be weird. I was in your spot too. I don't want you to have to go through what I went through. The other thing too is like the last time we'd seen Brett, we were in an NFC championship game. The last time we saw Aaron in a Packers uniform, we got closed out of the playoffs against a Lions team in Lambeau, right? So I think that there was more of a realization of like, oh yeah, it's probably time to move on, just from like that era of Packers football after that loss to the Lions.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
It just
feels different. There's a lot of factors.
I think that's the big thing too, is when they decided to move on from Brett, the fan base was not ready at all. And when
there were camps, there's multiple camps. Oh, yeah. There's multiple camps. I don't think like when Aaron got traded, it was like, yeah, that's probably what you do.
Situation. It was very much, I think most, and I think even like the darkness retreat right before, where everyone was just like, all right, like that's where we're like, just make up your mind if you want to play.
Well, like Brett had antics too. Like it wasn't wasn't doing this every year in Mississippi.
I think that bled into it though, of like having those years with Brett and having to go through that for Packers fans. And then you like get to Aaron, and you're like, we're doing this whole thing again every offseason of like, are you or are you not? Like, we've done this once already. Just tell us if you want to come back or not. We're not going to do this whole thing over. And I think once it got to that point again, I think Packers fans were mostly ready. And again, I think in so much different than the Brett, I think the Packers handled it much better this time around. I think Aaron handled it 1,000,000% better. And I think Packers fans, quite frankly, handled it better. It just felt totally different in exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Still wish we would have gotten that first round pick.
Oh, that was the other really cool thing that, for Aaron. Yes, that sucked. Going back to Brett for a moment, when he was a Jet, it wasn't like, the cool thing about that was the better the Jets did, the better the Packers draft pick was, where like if they advanced to the Super Bowl, they got what, like a first? If they advanced to like the playoffs, they got a second.
I don't remember.
It was like a third or fourth round pick. And then if they got it to the playoffs, it advanced up a round. And if they got to the Super Bowl, it like advanced two rounds. So like, not only was it like, oh, I still get to like, now I get to cheer for the Packers, but like, oh, Brett's over playing for the Jets. But like now the better that they did, you had even more incentive of like the Packers draft pick was getting better. So it was like a baked in, oh, I want to watch the Jets and hope they do well because we're going to get a better draft pick out of this. And then his bicep exploded and the team fell apart and they didn't make the playoffs and Green Bay got stuck with a crappy draft pick. I think it was fourth to third to second, but I could be wrong. Either way, Justice, you're the best. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. We're going to be writing about all this. Injuries, breakdowns, every bit of it. We do the five questions. I think it'll probably go up on Friday, where I talk with our sister site covering the other team. So this this week it'll be the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we just bounce ideas off of each other and stuff like that. So check that one out. That's one of my favorites of the week.
The trade became a third round pick for the Packers because the condition of Favre playing at least 50% of the snaps was met. If Favre had played 70% of the snaps, it would have become a second round pick. And if he played 80% of the snaps and the Jets reached the Super Bowl, it would have become a first round pick. So it, we were cheering for 80% of the snaps in Super Bowl against the Packers, with the Packers winning, so that the Packers get the Jets first round pick and the Packers win the Super Bowl. That was the goal. None of those things really went according to plan that year, but it is what it is. Again, follow him, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL, him, J-U-M-O-S-Q. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.